If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Charles Gardner from San Antonio and talking with Matt Velasquez today. Matt covered the Nuggets-Bucks game last night, and I'm hanging out on the road as I was in Charlotte and Orlando, and made my way to Texas where the Bucks will play the San Antonio Spurs on Wednesday. So we welcome you to another edition of our Bucks podcast, and we should have some good insights, we hope, as we've both seen the team lately. And Matt's seen them most recently. I watched on the League Pass last night, but the Bucks finally produced a victory with a very impressive effort over the Denver Nuggets, holding them to 74 points, and actually had played better defense in Charlotte also on Sunday afternoon after the lineup change by Coach Jason Kidd. And Matt, I guess that's where we'll start with the lineup change. That's been the biggest news of the last few days, certainly. Michael Carter-Williams being benched and Jabari Parker. But certainly Michael really responded last night. I think in Charlotte he was still a little bit stunned by everything. But I think last night he just played free off the bench and played great. He was contributing in all the areas I think the Bucks want him to contribute in. Blocks, steals. That's the way he has to play. We know he's not a great shooting point guard, but he can contribute in all these other ways, and he was able to do that last night. Also, Jabari played well. Maybe give your insights from the game, Matt, last night, what you saw.
Yeah, MCW, he said after the game that he thinks he came into, you know, Monday's game with a better attitude. I mean, he said he wasn't surprised at the lineup change on Sunday. He knew he'd been practicing with the second team, but there's still something jarring about being going from being a starter to coming off the bench. And you know, I think it's inevitable that's gonna at least bruise your ego a little bit. And so not after having a game and a day to kind of process that information and turn things around, he started out kind of invisible. In the first quarter he played the last 6 minutes. He didn't really do anything too flashy until really the last minute when he committed a kind of a boneheaded turnover that led to an easy basket for the Nuggets. But then in the second half he really ratcheted up the intensity, diving for loose balls, getting blocks, just doing a lot of little things along with, consistently making the right pass and making the right play, and also driving when and scoring when he needed to. And I think it was the kind of performance that, when the Bucks got Michael Carter-Williams, that's the kind of things they were looking for him to do and kind of let the game come to him and, do whatever the defense gives him, because he's the kind of player where at his best he has the weapons to beat most defenders, depending on what his strength is against them. If you put a smaller guard on him, he can post him up, and if you put a bigger guard on him, then he can use his quickness to get around, or he can move the ball. So that was definitely a positive for him after the way that he had kind of struggled to start the season, and definitely had some issues as you saw in Charlotte. Jabari Parker, season high 16 points yesterday. It looked like he was trying to, dunk on everybody from the time he got off the bench in the first quarter, throughout the game. And, he started strong, made his first four shots, including a baseline jumper that, if he can hit that consistently, then that's going to be a huge weapon for him in the mid-range, especially since, guys might sink off of him because they're worried he's going to drive and dunk. But then he cooled off. I think he missed about 8 or 9 shots as the game went on, and he kind of settled in. But I think he's okay with his role and that change.
Yeah, that's what he told me in the locker room on Sunday, you know, I talked to both players after the lineup change, and, you know, Michael Carter-Williams had the interesting comment where he said, well, if I was a coach, I wouldn't start me either. And you know, he was just responding to a couple of bad games that he had. But I think this is huge for his confidence to have this big game because, you know, in the locker room in Orlando after the game on Friday, you know, O.J. Mayo was talking to MCW and just trying to keep him, you know, positive, saying, look, it's not all your fault. I think MCW is taking a lot of it on himself, as any point guard would, knowing that the team had been underperforming and that he had been underperforming. So I think this is a big lift for him, and maybe playing off the bench will help him. Certainly when the Bucks traded for him, he's not supposed to come off the bench. We all know that. Brandon Knight trade, so there's a lot of scrutiny about this. But we'll see where this goes. But he certainly played well. The one thing he said to me after the game in Orlando was he said, no, you know, I knew I wasn't going to start, but I thought I would get some more minutes. I think he played only 16 minutes in the game in Charlotte. But last night he had big minutes, right?
You know, yeah, 30.
He earned them. Now he doubled those minutes almost. So I think that's the important thing to see. And Coach Kidd was talking about the plus-minus numbers. I think he's been talking about that this week and saying we have to get those better off the bench. In Orlando, all those bench guys, plus-minuses were in the bad territory. And if they feel if Jabari, MCW, Henson start getting those numbers in the plus territory, they're really going to be competitive and in some games. I think the other thing, Matt, that we talked about off the air here before we started was just that by putting Bayless and Mayo in the lineup, that just is bringing some veteran leadership. We've seen them trying to assert themselves, I guess you would say, to show that leadership. There's been a vacuum there for the Bucks, and I think both these players are really trying to provide it. You know, Mayo's still not hitting his three-point shot. If he starts hitting that, that'll be huge. He and I talked about that a little bit in the locker room after the game. He said, hey, I'm not hitting that yet, but I'm just trying to do everything I can to help the team. And we all know he can be streaky. He can hit a bunch of threes in a row. Certainly Bayless, he didn't shoot well from distance in Charlotte, but he has shot very well from the three all season. So I think Coach Kidd thought, hey, we'll have the veterans on the floor, we'll space the floor a little better, and then bring these young guys off the bench. And we'll see how that continues to work.
And before, you know, the game on Monday against Denver, you know, Kidd mentioned that one of the things about putting those veterans into the starting lineup is those guys, you know, they know how to talk, they know how to communicate on the floor. And that's something that he finds to be, you know, really important, especially for, you know, their spacing and their defense, you know, and just kind of getting that leadership out of them. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Mayo talking to Michael Carter-Williams, you know, after a game, you know, well, he's been doing that, you know, all year, even when he wasn't playing. You would see him on the bench,
yes,
pulling players aside, talking to them, kind of offering encouragement. You know, he's definitely taking that role on more than other guys. So, you know, Bayless has done it too. I haven't seen it as much from him, not that he hasn't done it, and not that that's not happening behind the scenes, but definitely from what I've seen, you know, OJ's been doing that, and I think that, like you said, there's a vacuum there, you know, with Zaza Pachulia gone, Ersan Ilyasova gone, Jared Dudley gone, you know, the Bucks are a young group, and they're looking for leadership and looking for veteran guys to look up to. And, you know, Kidd called it a copycat league, and if, you know, and if the veterans are doing one thing, the younger guys are going to follow. And I think that's true, and I've heard that from other people around the league that's the case. So, you know, having the right culture and the right leadership can definitely play a positive or negative role in the way that a team progresses throughout a season.
Oh, no question, Matt. There's a very fine line with that in the NBA, and we've all seen that. And you have to have that type of positive leadership. And I think OJ, as you said, has really been trying to do that. And you know, there was the incident with Cousins last week. I'm not sure that that contributed to that, but that's something else again. And of course, I asked him about that in Orlando, and he didn't want to talk about that, and it was kind of funny. But he said he didn't remember what he ate for Thanksgiving, so he couldn't remember the incident after the game.
Yeah, he does have that selective memory when he totally forgot about his whole first season in Milwaukee.
He did that. Yeah,
I'm sure there are some other people from that season who wish they could totally forget it.
But I do think what you said, he's trying to do the right things. And, you know, the amazing thing was on Sunday, he played 44 minutes. So here was his first start. And, you know, kid made the lineup change, and then he really rode those guys. I think he had 44 minutes for Mayo, 43 for Bayless in that game. Last night it was more balanced, correct?
I didn't have
the box score in front of me, but
it was definitely more balanced. The bench got a little bit more of a run because those bench guys were playing well. I mean, Michael Carter-Williams had a, you know, plus 27 plus minus. You know, Jabari Parker was plus. John Henson was plus. The only guy with a big plus minus in the starting lineup, even though he didn't necessarily, you know, shoot well or do a lot of big things, was OJ Mayo, who was plus 23. Nobody else was in double digits. And so, right. You know, Kidd mentioned that after the game, saying, hey, that, you know, that's the stat that they look at. That's what they care about. And obviously, when he's on the floor, he makes the team better and they perform better as a whole. And I think that plays into why he's a starter.
Yeah, I had a reader email me this week, Matt, you'd probably be interested in this, and said, okay, what is this plus minus thing all about? And I think it is being used more in the NBA. It's now on the official box scores. And so it's out there a little more. Not that insiders in the NBA didn't use it all the time. They did. And as you said, the coaches are very aware of what that plus minus stat is. But now, you know, that's looking. And it can be a little misleading at times. But it does show, you know, how the team is doing when a certain player is on the court. And just to define it for people, as this reader, I sent him an email back, you know, the plus minus is what is the point differential when a certain player is on the court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is your team gaining points, losing points in the minutes that you're on the court? And as you say, the coaches take quite a look at that, and it's becoming, maybe it's already been a very important stat in the NBA, but I think it's even taking more importance as we go along. As shown, this is the first year that they've included it on the official box score, so that tells you something, right?
Definitely. I mean, it's a useful stat, and I think it's one that I know we've looked at in the past few years that I've been working with you.
Yeah.
You know, and we've definitely taken account of, because, you know, it, you know, like you said, it can be misleading, but more often than not, you're going to learn something about the flow of the game and who was productive at certain times.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So this lineup change, I guess we'll watch this, Matt. We'll see how this evolves. I'm sure that Coach Kidd is going to stick with it, given the success in the two games. You know, it was even in the loss, it produced some good things, and certainly against Denver showed to be very effective as those bench guys even picked up their play. So we'll watch that as we go down the future. What did you see with the defense? I mean, do you see improvement? This has been the problem, of course. I noticed today I was looking up the defensive efficiency ratings because I was doing the game preview on the Spurs, and of course they're first in the NBA, not only in points against, but in defensive efficiency rating, which is points per 100 possessions. The Bucks were last. They're up to 28th, Matt, after that 74-point game. So, hey, that's progress.
Yeah.
Do you think they can keep moving up?
Well, I mean, there's something to be said for the opponent that they were facing. You know, on Monday, the Nuggets have lost seven in a row. They're reeling. You know, they really, you know, seem out of sorts offensively. and they did take a couple, you know, pretty ugly shots.
Pretty bad shots, right?
The shot selection wasn't great. You know, even open shots didn't look good a lot of the time. You know, but I think the Bucks they definitely, you know, I think they moved better off the ball. They stuck with their men. They did communicate. You could see it on the floor. And I think that they did a good job of, I mean, sure they had 19 fouls, you know, but they did a good job of kind of playing, you know, fundamental defense underneath the basket, keeping their hands up, not giving extra points on an and-one opportunity. And I think that they seem like they're starting to understand and get a feel for what they need to do on defense. You know, there were multiple plays where guys were diving for loose balls, and I know there was one where like three different players dove for the same ball, and eventually the Bucks got. I mean, you have three guys diving for a ball, you know. I think more often than not, you're going to get possession.
Was that the play where they got the fast break basket?
Yeah,
that was. And I think it resulted in a dunk by Parker, didn't it? On the other end.
Yeah, I think so. If it wasn't a dunk by Parker, then it was probably the one that he missed, which was where he caught the ball off a pass in transition, looked up, saw Kenneth Fareed, and said, "All right, I'm going for it anyway," and tried to dunk over him and got fouled. You know, didn't make it, but still, I mean, that, you know, you like the way he's going about it. But overall, I think the, you know, Michael Carter-Williams and Jason Kidd both kind of spoke highly about the defense and said they're starting to move in the right direction. But at the same time, you know, they're going to have to play the best defense they've played all year if they're going to compete against the Spurs on Wednesday night in San Antonio.
Well, and now you have an angry group of San Antonio Spurs coming back home as they lost in Chicago last night, 92-89, ended a five-game winning streak for the Spurs. Interestingly enough, I thought the Spurs are 5-4 on the road, but they're 9-0 at home. So the Bucks have not won down here since 2008. So it's been a long time. That was the first year that Scott Skiles was coach. So that seems like a long time ago to me, Matt. And mm-hmm. I was trying to jar my memory about when they last one down here, and you know, it's been quite a long time. It was interesting that Mike Budenholzer, who of course was his first assistant and now coaches the Atlanta Hawks, his team lost by 20 to the Spurs recently, and he said that he felt they're playing such great defense again. He said it's almost back to the David Robinson, Tim Duncan days where they just dominated defensively. And that was an interesting comment, I thought. And Coach Greg Popovich, who's always critical, as we know, of his team, said today in the Express News, let me see if I can read the quote here. It's pretty good. But basically he said, you know, our offense might not be clicking until March. You know, he said, we got new guys. They've got LaMarcus Aldridge in. And he had a good game last night, 21 points, 12 rebounds in Chicago. But although he was blocked late in the game in a key sequence by Pau Gasol. But again, he's saying, look, we've got new guys, kind of what Coach Kidd has been saying. And this is going to take a little time. But they do have that defense. They do have, you know, that culture here that's amazing. And so it will be a very tough assignment for the Bucks on Wednesday. And then they go to Detroit, a team they beat in the last week in Milwaukee. So, you know, and they did a really good job with Monroe having a great game against his former team. So, you know, the Pistons will be ready and trying to avenge that loss. So a couple tough games here, then Saturday night at home against the Knicks. The Knicks have been struggling a little more now, but we all know they're much improved over last year.
And we get to see Porzingis again.
And Porzingis will be in Milwaukee to see if he can, you know, show any more of those putback dunks. It's always fun to watch him, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, you know, since I'm on the road and covering Marquette and doing Wisconsin football stuff, you know, I can't always, you know, be at the Bucks games with you, but I'm always keeping up with what's going on in the NBA with, you know, podcasts and different things I read. And I feel like Porzingis comes up like an inordinate amount. Like everyone is just enthralled with this guy. It's like talk about the Warriors and then Porzingis, and that's just kind of what the NBA is all about right now.
Yeah, well, the Warriors certainly. I watched the end of their game on the League Pass last night, Pat. I mean, Utah gave them everything. Derek Favors. Hey, by the way, the Utah Jazz. They have a very good starting lineup in particular. And, you know, Alec Burks, you had Hayward, Derek Favors, Gobert. They gave the Warriors everything they could handle. And, of course, Curry hit an incredible shot late, and the Warriors were able to pull it out.
I mean, do his shots even count as incredible anymore? Like, he need to, like, do a flip for a shot to be incredible? Because that's just what he does. That's just what he does.
You just shake your head. He hit a long two that was nutty. I mean, you know, it's not just the three-pointers. It's amazing. And, you know, the Jazz had a chance to take the lead in the final seconds, but didn't do it, and they had to foul. And, you know, they came close, but no cigar, Matt, as they almost ended that winning streak. But there's really been a lot of good stories in the NBA this week talking about the Warriors. They're now on this long road trip, 7-game trip, which ends in Milwaukee.
Which they would be going for win number 25 if they were still undefeated at that point.
Correct. So 25 in a row. I think that maybe the toughest on this trip, they're going to be at Indiana on December 8th. And that is going to be tough. The Pacers are playing so well, playing well at home. Paul George, if you want to circle a date and say, when do you think the Warriors are going to lose? I'd say that. They have Toronto and Brooklyn. They're at Charlotte tomorrow. Charlotte's been playing well, as we saw. But I would say Indiana. Then they're at Boston, at Milwaukee. So we'll see. Will they be unbeaten when they come into the Bradley Center? Be very interesting. Yeah.
And at that point, at the end of a 7-game trip, you know, how much do you play Steph Curry? How much do you play Thompson and Draymond Green? You know,
it's a back-to-back.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, that's going to be one of the issues for the Warriors this season. How much do you put the pedal to the metal and keep winning games? And how much do you say, all right, we've got to play, we're playing for something bigger here, you know, yeah, and make sure guys get their rest and aren't totally gassed when it comes to, you know, April and May. I mean, I'm glad I don't have to make that decision because that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, Luke Walton and Steve Kerr are I'm sure, you know, talking about that maybe on a daily basis, because there is pressure to keep winning when you're 19-0. They may be relieved to have a loss at some point. It's going to be interesting. The other thing, Matt, talking about Kobe, as he came out with the other league news that has been huge, was Kobe Bryant saying he would retire at the end of the season. And I tend to view this as very good that he did this. You know, so much uncertainty, and now people can honor him, so to speak. I know he's in Milwaukee February 22nd, and all Bucks fans are hoping that he will play in that game. He's had some great moments against the Bucks, as he has against every team. Remember the game winner he hit over Charlie Bell? I think it was in 2009, mm-hmm, in a great game against the Bucks. There was a thought that he had a charging call just before that, and the foul was called on Andrew Bogut, then playing for the Bucks. But it was a great game, and the Bucks will see him soon, as they're going to be out in L.A. on December 15th, and that's not a back-to-back. I checked the schedule. The Lakers are playing in Houston on the 12th, and then don't play again till that night against the Bucks. So you would think the Bucks will see him that night. An interesting thing, Matt, in the San Antonio paper today, a column comparing Bryant and Tim Duncan, who have kind of come in to, you know, been contemporaries throughout their careers. Mm-hmm. Duncan winning two MVP trophies and Bryant won. Both have won 5 titles. Bryant earning $25 million this year, the NBA's highest salary, and Duncan earning $5.25 million this year, the league's 145th third highest salary. So it's just kind of interesting to see. They've done it their own ways. They've both been very successful, but they admit they are polar opposites probably in personality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember when these guys were drafted and coming up in the league, and that was kind of at the time when I was starting to kind of take off as a fan. And I know a lot of people my age, you know, just love Kobe Bryant. My one of my roommates from college, you know, huge NBA fan. And you ask him who he's a fan of in terms of a team. He goes, I don't really follow a team. I just follow the Lakers because I love Kobe. You know, and that's kind of just how it is. I mean, Kobe and Tim Duncan, you know, they shake hands. They got 10 rings between them. You know, that's pretty crazy, you know. And you also, you know, Duncan has 3 finals MVPs to Kobe's 2. And, you know, the list goes on and on. You can compare, you know, how many times they were on the NBA first team. Kobe was there one more time than Duncan. You know, on defensive teams, Duncan was there 3 more times than Kobe. I mean, you know, obviously Kobe has higher points, but Duncan has more rebounds, you know, more playoff appearances, you know, all those different things. I mean, these two guys will go in the Hall of Fame together, even though they are polar opposites. And, you know, obviously they're both not going to play forever. You wonder how much longer Duncan will play. You know, he somehow every year comes back, and even though he might look a little awkward running or might not be at the same speed he used to be, he still comes back and he's able to play out the whole season and be productive in the finals and have success in games where you might not think that he's going to have success against guys that might not be a good matchup. He just is a winner, and he just finds ways to be productive no matter who he's playing against. And Kobe, I mean, Jason Kidd had a lot of good things to say about Kobe before yesterday's game, just calling him a champion and saying he's right up there with Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan, and just saying that even though he's struggling this year, I know he's shooting a lot more and missing a lot more than he normally does, but he just said he's always a threat, and everybody's talking about Kobe struggling now. This is Kidd speaking. He said, but he thinks at the end of the season he'll have the last laugh and he'll have a successful season and he's going to get it going, you know. And in terms of memories that Kidd had about Kobe, he remembers that, you know, they played against each other in the finals back in 2002. And, you know, he said Kobe probably hit a couple shots on him that series. You know, Kobe, you know, he averaged, I think, 26 points a game that series. Something close to that. Shaq was the MVP with over 30 points a game and absolutely dominated, you know, whoever the Nets had to play against him at center. There was really nobody who could match up. But then also Kidd remembers back in 2000, there was a Western Conference semifinal game where Kobe hit a game winner over him. This was back when Kidd was playing for the Suns and he had that short bleached blonde hair. That just kind of sends you back, into the way back machine, you know. But then, you know, Kidd also kind of, you know, he was asked before the game, you know, hey, you know, you played a long career, you know what it's like to have to decide, you know, when to hang him up. And he said, well, you start questioning how long it takes to get to the car after the game, and when it's taking an extra 30 or 45 minutes to get to the car, then you know you should probably do something else.
That was how Jason knew. Yeah. Interesting. Well, in this same column by Buck Harvey, he contrasts saying, you know, how Kobe, the Lakers, they had this slick black envelope for the fans to open at the Lakers game on Sunday that said he was retiring. And, you know, it started Dear Basketball. And then at the end, he says, what about Duncan? He says, ever the polar opposite, he might be on a farewell tour too, but no one knows. And that's interesting because obviously Duncan hasn't said, maybe he will say later in the year he's retiring, or maybe he won't say anything. Maybe he'll just walk off after that last game, whenever it is for the Spurs. So, you know, very, very interesting, these two guys. And as you said, two Hall of Famers, I mean, tremendous players, and it's been fun to watch for all these years. And I think that's why, certainly Kobe, now he's in Philadelphia on Tuesday night.
Back home,
and that'll be so. I'm sure everywhere he goes now, as you said, a lot of people wear the Kobe jerseys and come no matter what in the NBA cities, but now they're really all going to come out the rest of the season.
Yeah, I remember when I used to intern with the Pacers, you know, they'd have food before the game, and you knew it was a big game when they had the ice cream sundae bar for the pregame meal, and whenever the Lakers came to town, that was a big game, so they had that ice cream sundae bar.
And there was an indication right there.
Oh, yeah, and the fans would be full, and there'd be, you know, lots of people there, you know, especially, you know, there to see Kobe. And, you know, you mentioned how much he gets paid and how little Duncan gets paid in comparison, and you know, obviously that's just a, you know, the different ways to go about it. You look at the Spurs, and they've always been in contention. They're in position to still be in contention for a long time, even if he's gone. Now that LaMarcus Aldridge is there and Kawhi Leonard's still there, and they're going to be on the verge of a transition with their big three, you know, kind of coming towards the end of their careers.
Very soon, you would think, right?
You know, and you could argue that Kobe is, you know, his contract is a huge detriment to the Lakers because, you know, he's taking up so much cap space and he's not producing and all these different things. But, you know, I think that, you know, the Lakers were in a tough position where, you know, you can't give up Kobe Bryant. I mean, this is a guy who has done so much for that franchise over the course of the 20 years that he's been there. And he's, you know, been like, you know, like we said with people showing up, no matter where you are, he's must-see TV, you know, no matter how good or bad the team is. And I'm sure the Lakers have made tons of money off Kobe being must-see TV and being the type of player, you know, top 10 all-time player that he's been. And so, you know, they had to kind of show that respect and say, hey, if you want to stay here, we're not going to push you out the door. It's almost like what happened with the Yankees and Derek Jeter, where he wasn't anything near the shortstop that he was
at the end of his career,
but you don't move him out of shortstop and you don't pay him less because he's Derek Jeter. And it's funny because, you know, Kobe announced that he's retiring on Derek Jeter's website. And so there's kind of that tie-in.
That was interesting, too. I do think this is good for the Lakers also because it gives them clarity for the future. You know, eventually you have to move into the future. And there's an argument that they shouldn't have given Kobe this last contract. But as you said, you just stated why they did. And, you know, because he cannot live up to a $25 million contract anymore. He just cannot. So, and they have to move forward and try to, you know, rebuild their team in a positive way. And I think this will help. This will help all around. And he'll get his respect now the rest of the year. They do have D'Angelo Russell. They did have a high pick in the last draft. We'll see how he does.
Yeah, I was listening to you know, your buddy Zach Lowe on his podcast, and he was saying maybe this is a stealth tank job because if their draft pick is in the top three, then they keep it. But if it falls out of the top three, then the Sixers get it. And so if they play poorly enough and they get a top three pick, that accelerates the rebuild a lot.
No doubt.
You know, and if that pick drops to four or below and the Sixers get it, that's gonna hurt.
That's really gonna hurt. Yeah. The Sixers, I'm sure think they're getting it, but maybe they're not. You know, it will be interesting to see. The Lakers aren't going to be very good the rest of the year. Let's be honest.
No.
So well, just one more thing, Matt. Let's go. We said we have to say something about Greg Monroe before we sign off. You know, Greg has really been playing well for the Bucks. You know, his spin moves, he can do a spinorama in there, can't he? And put people on the, you know, carousel. I don't know what you call it. They're spinning the wrong way when he's spinning to the bucket. And I think he's been doing very well. He had a good game in Charlotte, especially in the second half, and the Hornets threw like three people in there trying to guard him. He almost fouled out Cody Zeller, and then Tyler Hansbrough, Psycho T, made the reappearance in that game after Coach Steve Clifford said that he wasn't going to use him in the pregame. It turned out that he did use him, and as usual, he hurt the Bucks because he just had, you know, hustles. And he at least bodied up against Monroe. But I think we have to give Greg some credit. He's really been playing well. Played well again last night. They didn't need him in the fourth quarter, did they, Matt?
No, no. I mean, it, Henson and Parker and MCW, that whole unit was playing so well that Monroe didn't need to be in. And he'd already, you know, he'd already done his job. I mean, he scored 18 points. You know, he played solid defense. He got some rebounds. You know, he was a presence. I mean, when you watch him drive, you know, I'm so used to watching college at this point, you know, of the season, that, you know, being in the thick of college basketball season. But when you see guys just, you know, kind of go full speed into the paint, you're like, all right, here comes the charge. Like, there's not enough body control. But Greg Monroe, he just has such great body control and such great court awareness that he knows where defenders are going to be, and he can plant, spin, or, you know, plant and stop and then go up. Like, he knows exactly where he is and where he needs to be and where the defenders are coming from. And more often than not, that leads to some easy buckets in and around the paint because he can make his own space.
Yeah, he really does that as well as anybody that I've seen. And, you know, he again is, we were talking about leadership, and I think it's hard for a new player. Some guy, Greg just signed the contract. It just came to the Bucks during the summer with that free agent deal, that max deal. But I do think I see a little of him, and he's kind of a quiet leader also, but you do see that he's well respected, and he always, has some good comments after the game. Even after the game in Charlotte, he said, look, you know, the lineup change, he said, well, whatever coach does, we have to respond to that, and we have to respond in a positive way as a team. He said that's the only way, you know, we're going to fight out of this slump that the team was in. So I think Greg was that type of leader in Detroit too. He emerged as that by end of his time with the Pistons. So I think you're going to see that more and more with the Bucks as well.
Yeah, we'll have to see how they respond because over the past few weeks, the defense hasn't been good. They've been allowing like 100-point games to everybody, you know, and most games, I mean, you've seen it firsthand, you know, most games have been blowouts. You know, either they're getting beat by double digits or, you know, that one game they beat the Pistons by double digits. And it's only the you know, Charlotte game that was a close game since, you know, going all the way back to the, you know, the game against the Cavs at home that went to two overtimes. I mean, there was a long stretch there where they just weren't playing competitive basketball.
Well, I think the most concerning game, Matt, was the Kings game, you know. You're at home. The Sacramento Kings scored 129 points. That just can't happen.
No.
You know, I know they play at a high pace, all that. But no DeMarcus Cousins. Cousins isn't even in the game. Yes, Rudy Gay. So they let Rudy Gay run wild. They let Rondo just do whatever he wanted. And you saw the frustration spilling out at the end of the game. That's why you had the technical on Kidd. He took that. He said to stand up for his team and fouls not being called. And I believe that he did it for that reason. But also, I think it was to send a message to the team to say, look, you know, coaches will take technicals to tell their team, you know, this isn't right. This isn't good enough. And his frustration spilled over. And then we know there was frustration in the hallway with the teams having a, you know, heated discussion and police and security everywhere in the hall after the game. It was a strange sight. And the Bucks players, you know, escorting Mayo to the parking lot. But it just was a symbol of that frustration. But I think now they're trying to, you know, put this behind them, and we'll see how they do. The schedule certainly is going to be difficult, but they're also going to have some winnable games. So I think, and we discussed this in the last podcast, you know, they have to stay near the 500 mark. You get too far away from that, they're four games under now. You know, they're 13th in the conference. You have to stay in that range with all these teams because there's so much parity in the East this season.
Definitely. So I guess that kind of brings us to the end, I think.
I think that's good for this week, and we'll talk again next week. The Bucks have some home games next week, Matt, and Portland and the Clippers. They're kind of starting this stretch where we're going to be talking about some of the Western teams, and I think that will be interesting as they really start diving in and playing against the West for the first time this season. So we'll talk to everybody next week, and we'll be back and talk about Golden State also. We'll be in Milwaukee next week, Matt, so maybe that's something for our podcast next week.
Definitely. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining. Like Charles said, we'll be back next week. Feel free to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the easiest and fastest ways to get the latest podcast onto your phone or tablet. And as always, you can follow our work at jsonline.com/bucks.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.